Yes. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to just your local, average, ordinary, regular, local church sex talk. You know, let's just act like this is normal. Last time, raise your hand if you were here last time. Okay, way to come back for more. You know, the gift that keeps on giving. Raise your hand if this is your first time. Oh my goodness, more than half. Well, last time we had fun, not too much fun, don't worry. You guys had more fun than we had. We weren't sure if this was gonna work, but we're ready to have fun this time.
I am.
Wasn't that a little stressful last time?
Yes.
A little dry mouth, but turns out we lived, everyone was fine. A few were appreciative. So, we're doing it again. Second verse, same as the first. So, where do we begin?
Hang on. We got a slide coming. Yep, Greg's got it. He's got it. Sex is, guys. Okay, we're going to start with a question that will be on the screen in just a second when we're ready. So we're going to start with this question. Why are we here? And I'm going to give a very simple answer this time around. And you've heard us say it before. You're going to hear us say it many, many times. We want to be a church that does sex well. Have you ever been a part of a church that didn't do sex well? Anybody? Including our own, okay? Which includes maybe just not hardly talking about it at all or talking about it in harmful ways. So we so want to be a church that does sex well. Simply put, Josh, you have a question for us here.
Yeah, we told you a lot last time why we are here, but you are here. Some of you came back, some of you came for the first time. I would like to know, why are you here? Why did you decide to come to a church sex talk night? This is not a rhetorical question. So, who can outlast whom? Would anyone be willing to bravely say?
Over there.
Yes, Chris.
I would say a couple things. One is, I think sex is integral to marriage.
Yes, sex is integral to marriage. Yes. Thank you for going first. Thank you for going, Chris.
And repeat it.
Chris said, it's integral to marriage. It's worth learning more about. It's critical for us to help guide our kids. And so many good reasons there. Someone else, why are you here? Ray. That's well said.
Good words. That's
well said. One of the most beautiful gifts God gave us, and also one of the most
bedeviling
and
exasperating. Yeah.
Can I get an amen?
Yes.
Amen. I saw another hand. Jeremy. Yeah. You've noticed that too. There's a lot of brokenness and confusion inside the church and outside the church. One or two more. Why are you here? Yes, Will. In my own personal life, I don't know if I've ever had healthy sexuality. That's humbling to hear you admit. That's brave. Thank you, Will. Can anyone relate to that? That in your life, that's been a maybe out of reach or ambiguous thing. Stacy, where? Okay. Hi, Stacy. That's good. That'll preach. We need to know what God says about sex. We need to know the truth about sex. So when false ideas, deceptive ideas, when the devil wants to lead us astray, we have clarity on the difference. All right. I think you've justified your existence here. So thank you for speaking up on behalf of all. This makes sense. I'm glad we're here. I think of three C's when it comes to this, sort of like, why are we here? Number one, there's confusion about this. Yes, it's unclear. Number two, there's concern for this because it's important and it's impactful. And thirdly, and I think this one is fine, there's curiosity. Who's here because you're curious? I'm here because I'm curious. The teacher gets to learn the most, so this has been an all-you-can-eat buffet. There's mystery and awe and wonder about this, however you relate to it. It's just an element of life that is, engenders curiosity, and that's good. So, we should never be ashamed to talk about what God was not ashamed to create. I think he's more comfortable than we are, but with practice, I think we can begin to become as accepting and as understanding and as appreciative of this. As we said last time, sex is a thing. It's not everything. It's not nothing. And so understanding and appreciating it in its proper place is worthy work, and we can't do it alone. So a way to come together incarnationally in person to kind of be present to witness the unfolding of how we talk about this as a church.
Great. Josh and I are going to make some comments to kind of set the tone and the stage for the conversation. So let me start with this. What can you expect? My first thing is let's just notice that language is limited. So we're going to use words like sex and sexuality. We're going to use them sometimes interchangeably. We're going to use them sometimes in different manners because they mean a number of different things in a number of different contexts. Can you go there with us and not get too stuck on a certain definition of the words sex and sexuality? You with me? Thank you. Really appreciate that. Secondly, we said this last time, but we're going to say it again. We are intentionally not leading with the do's and the don'ts of Christian sexuality, not because we're avoiding it, not because we've changed anything theologically, but because we want to look at the big picture, the why of Christian sexuality, so that we can more maturely live out the how. One of our favorite authors, you're going to see her several times tonight. She says it this way: God not only calls us to sexual morality, but also wants us to grow in sexual maturity. And so that's kind of our aim here. You're going to hear our values baked in to everything that we're talking about tonight, but we're not going to give a list of rules. Are you okay with that? Yes? You're in the right place then. Josh, will you talk to us about kind of a mindset that we can come to this with?
Yes, so to get someone on the same page, a level playing field, here's 10 mindset things. Number one, there's more to learn. Okay, can we all agree that there's more to this than any one of us? No, so there's more to learn. Number two, we're all learning here, myself, Laura included. Number three, you don't have to agree. Number four, is there four?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. We all get it wrong sometimes. I'm not saying no big deal, but I'm just saying figuring this out, even poorly at times, is worth pursuing. Number five, you can change your mind. It's rare, not unheard of as an adult to change your mind, but when presented with new or better information, you can change your mind. Number six, let's be gracious and compassionate. Kind of like chill. It's going to be okay. We're going to be all right. This can be a tense. Can we take a deep breath? One, two, three. Let's be gracious and compassionate. That's his character. That's his heart for us. This is a difficult and complex topic. We will be uncomfortable at times. This will get better with time. God is with us. We're not alone.
Amen.
Amen.
You know what we forgot to do?
Introduce ourselves.
Yeah, what's your name?
Josh Mann. It's not like Batman. Just like a nickname, like some of my high school buddies took years to realize. No, it's Josh Space Mann. There's my lovely wife, Bex, over there. Really appreciating me calling her out. Who are you?
Wait, do you work here?
Yeah, most of the time.
What do you do?
I work for you.
No.
I do. This is my boss. This will be part of my performance review.
No.
Act happy.
What are your job duties?
I get to work with men, marriages, healthy sexuality, healing and recovery stuff, and where those all intersect. Soul care. So that's my day job, and I love it. Thank you for letting me be a part of many of your worlds. What about you?
Yes, I'm Laura Scher, pastor of Spiritual Formation. Get to do a lot of the work with Josh, alongside him with healing prayer and soul care. I have been married now for 34 years. We just celebrate our anniversary.
Oh, there's your boy.
Nate, there he is. Lucky man, lucky man.
Anniversary on Saturday, in like 3 days ago. So, way to go.
We just started our... What? Oh, we don't have an anniversary because we got married on leap year. So do the weird math there. Yep. Uh-huh.
Okay, fun
got married
fact.
right here on...
Right here?
Yeah, uh-huh.
You consummated it right here.
No. Oh, okay. No.
Okay. Sorry.
It already got weird. Okay.
Hey, you signed up for this. You asked for it.
All okay. Right. If you come back, here's what you have. To look forward to. We have planned out actually a series of 6 conversations, so this is number 2. The 3rd one happens on April 23rd. Sex is powerful, the nature of attraction and desire. And then we have 3 more planned for next year. And then along the way, we're going to have some very specific, targeted conversations. The first one of those is Thursday, May 21st, a conversation for singles. So keep watching the website. If you have questions, email us, call us. But we love having you here. So that's what lies ahead.
Anyone single in the room? Anyone single in the room? You know, like on LinkedIn, you're like, available for work. You know, you could just notice. I'm sorry.
Okay, here we go, guys. All right, we have a really cool topic that we're going to get into, the 12 dimensions of healthy sexuality. Before we do that, I want to do a quick review, because each time we do this, we're going to kind of set this kind of in a grounded space of what Julie Slattery calls the 4 pillars of covenant sexuality. And she says this: your sexuality is a living metaphor of God's covenant love. Take a second to think about that. Read it again for yourself. I'm guessing you might have some questions about it. Your sexuality is a living metaphor of God's covenant love. And Dr. Julie talks about the 4 pillars of covenant sexuality. Before I get to the first one, let's talk about what a covenant is. A covenant is an agreement. It's a binding agreement. It's a promise. It's a commitment. Biblically, we hear God make covenant with the nation of Israel when he says, I will be your God. You will be my people. That covenant lived on through the nation, through Jesus Christ. It lives on through us. And it's grounded in this first pillar of God's character and nature, that he is perfectly faithful. He pursues us with his unfailing love. And then we learn to trust that he's actually perfectly loyal. He's the one who said, I will never leave you or forsake you. And so we get to live that out imperfectly here on earth, right? And yet we get to mirror God in this way. Have you ever been to a wedding ceremony where the words are spoken, till death do us part? In sickness and in health. That sounds a lot like God's covenant vows that he's made with us. I won't leave you. I won't forsake you. We do this imperfectly, but we do get to mirror God and his faithfulness in our covenant relationships with each other. And then we add to that this second pillar that's called intimate knowing. Have you ever met a human that didn't need or want to be known for who they are authentically? Do you want to be known for who you are authentically? I believe that is a desire that God put in us by design. And as we look at the Hebrew scripture, one of the words used for sex often actually translates to intimately know. Sex is to intimately know. And it's the same word that's used for how God knows us. We find it in places like Psalm 139. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. So God designed us this way on purpose to be intimately known by him, by others, and our sexuality is a God-crafted expression of this desire. Our third pillar, it's called sacrificial giving. Think about it with me. Our gospel story is this, isn't it? That God would send his own son in the flesh to lay down his physical, literal life for us. And then a life of healthy sexuality is grounded in mutual giving and sacrifice. Once again, a mirror. Paul kind of uses this metaphor when he says in Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And then we've got our fourth pillar. It's called passionate celebration. Consider this with me. The genuine Christian life is a life full of passion. What do you think about that? Thank you. Is Jeff Roth in the room? That sounded like Jeff Roth. Yes. The genuine Christian life is a life full of passion. Let me give some examples. If you were here this last weekend in a worship service, I believe that was a service full of passionate celebration. We got to baptize 30 people. I was singing my guts out. I was crying my eyeballs out. Anybody else? Anybody else? Hands in the air, moving to the music. You got to baptize. You got to put people underwater, pull them up, hug them, hold them in your arms, and celebrate passionately with them. I think that's an example of this pillar. Then we have our King David in the Old Testament. He dances ridiculously before the Lord in passionate celebration. He even gets made fun of for it. He writes song after song that is dripping with passionate celebration. And then please do not forget that we have a whole book of the Bible called the Song of Songs. What's it about? Passionate celebration in sexuality and in pleasure. So tonight, we're grounding ourselves in who God is, that he is faithful, that he knows us intimately, that he has sacrificed himself for us, and then he invites us into passionate celebration, and that our sexuality gets to be a mirror and a metaphor of these realities.
That's good. That checks. So these are what God intends for each one of us. This is the center of it all. He gives us his faithfulness, his pursuit of our hearts our whole life long, his sacrificial giving for our greatest need, his passionate celebration. He rejoices over us with singing. He wants you to return these to him. He wants your faithfulness to him. He wants your pursuing his heart, like David was a man after his heart. He wants your sacrificial life laid down. He wants your passionate celebration of the joy of your salvation and the friendship of knowing the King. And whether we are single or partnered, married, there's a difference in how these get expressed. God seems to say that marriage is a temporal reality, just for earth to kind of, like the moon to the sun, reflect the greater reality. And God knows that in marriage, two people rub together more closely than in any other kind of relationship. Is that a pun? I don't know. You decide. But I have a point. In marriage, two people, like, think of like gears in a car in an engine where two beings with structure, like, are near each other regularly. There's friction, there's heat. And sex is a gift God gave to cool the engine, to bond us together for the duration of that thing. That's a valid metaphor. We must not let that experience replace our vision and drive and hunger for the ideal. Married people, you could be distracted from the main purpose for union, for intimacy, for knowing. It's not horizontal, it's vertical. So there's a gift for the bonded friction, heat, intensity of two people becoming one. For those of us who are single, this is the primary celebration and lived out experience of that. We feature and focus on the significance that this is what God created us for. And in heaven, this is the reality we'll be living out together. And so no matter who you are, how you relate to this, it's a significant, sacred part of how God made us, and it's helpful to appreciate it in a broader context that is more than just biology and mechanics and plumbing and all that stuff. So thank you for that helpful review. Last thing we want to do as we kind of enter into session two is, again, honor and acknowledge the lament in the room. Our sexuality is rife with disappointment. When you looked forward to what you thought life would be like, in many ways, it's different than what you expected. There's been tremendous pain or abuse or grief or loss. Some of your best days in this regard are behind you. Some of what you hoped your best days would include haven't transpired. There's loneliness and singleness that we didn't want. We didn't even choose, but was kind of chosen for us. It's just like this area of our life can be impacted in a lot of different ways. There's abortion and rape and sexual immorality and regret and shame and rejection from our family of origin, all related to this topic. Like there's so much baked in here. And so we enter into this going, we got to. What's the alternative? But we don't do so cavalierly, thinking like, oh, this is awesome. We're all jacked. It's delicate. It's tender. And we can hold multiple realities in the room together at the same time. We can hold space. We can grieve with those who grieve. We can rejoice with those who rejoice. We do not all have to be in the same place to be in the same place. And so thank you for being here, because your experience and kind of position on the map represents an important part of it. And without you, that picture would be less complete. For those of you who are grieving, we feel with you. We're sorry this has been disappointing. I pray that you can be receptive and receive something good from God for your heart. For those of you who are confused, I pray that God would give wisdom. For those of you who are encouraged, great. May God add to that. But just want to name that before we go further, that if this is you and you're kind of mixed feelings or ambivalent about this, in one sense, we get it. We don't get it. Your story is unique, but thank you for being here nonetheless.
So on that note, I'd love to lead us in a time of prayer. Can you join me for a moment and I'll just kind of guide us through it? Would you start on your own with just checking in with yourself? Checking in with what are you bringing into the room? Let's remember that we get to be vulnerable, transparent, and honest with God. He's not looking away in shame. He's looking right at us in love. So what are you bringing with you? Might be good to also acknowledge some hopes that we have that we bring into the room. Hopes for healing, hopes for future. And we get to acknowledge also the passion and celebration that's already here. There's good stuff here. So God, would you meet each one of us, and would you meet us collectively too? We're here together on purpose. We believe that that is of great value, to be together. And so I'm just going to pray out this simple prayer. We've got three little movements in prayer. As we bring you, God, our sexuality, we bring you our bodies, we bring you our relationships, and we say, would you bless it? Because it's yours, and you came up with this idea in the first place. Would you bless it? The second movement is, God, thank you. Thank you for who you are. We've already recognized who you are, and thank you for how you have wired us to be in covenant with you and to be like you. And the third movement is that we ask you for help. We need your guidance. We need your wisdom. We need your healing touch. We admit there's so much we don't know. We admit the confusion at times. And so we ask for your help. It's in your name we pray. Amen. All right. If you didn't already grab one of these, this is our handout that we're using tonight. So you might want to grab that.
There's some on the back table.
Some on the back table. One
by
for everyone.
Jim over there.
So this handout, you're not going to need to follow super closely, but you can follow along. The first column is the definition of each of the 12 dimensions, and that'll be on the screen as well. The second column are some check-in questions. We'll be using some of them, but not all of them. Take them with you. I think they're going to be a really handy follow-up. And then the third column we won't be using tonight, but it's a take-home for you. Ways that you can support this aspect of healthy sexuality, as well as some scriptures that we think are really key to this. So we are going to use this tonight. As we launch in, I have three questions for Josh about this topic, and then he's just going to go for it, okay? Are you ready? First question, Josh. We're calling this sex is more than intercourse. What the heck do you mean by that?
Well, I've discovered some long hidden techniques from Southeast Asia, and I'm just kidding. I hope that wasn't too inappropriate. What we mean by sex is more than intercourse is thinking of the sex transaction of intercourse is a reductionistic view of this. Our sex and sexuality begins before that and extends beyond it. And if you want to rightly understand and relate to and experience the best of that aspect of life, whatever God's packed into that for us, single or married, then we need to appreciate it in its earliest kind of form so that we can connect the dots on this. Because sex is fundamentally related to relating. Sex is a high and profound form of relating, but it doesn't just come out of nowhere, guys. It builds on a foundation of relational connectedness and a healthy sense of self and boundaries and values and movement and progression. And so it will get off if it's not connected to other capacities and other realities. And so that's what we mean by sex is more than intercourse. There's just more to it than that.
Thank you. And we are going to try to save time for questions at the end. So if you have questions that are brewing, you might want to write them down and make a note. Another question for you, Josh. So we have a room full of all ages and stages of life here. There are dating, not dating. There are sexually active, not sexually active. We've got young people, old people, and everywhere in between. How is this particular topic relevant to everyone? We want everyone here. Is this relevant?
Well, each one of you walked into the room with like an ecosystem in your mind of thoughts, ideas, attitudes, experiences, right? You can't not. And so are those attitudes, thoughts correct? Are they misguided? Was was your formation and education intentional or accidental? Is your sexuality and understanding more culturally influenced, or does it reflect like the beauty and mystery and transcendence of how God sees it? And are you related to others? Are you connected to others? This is a societal issue. I do not want us to think like Western individualistic. If I don't plan on having sex in the next month, what relevance does this have for me? It's just a part of life. And if we want to be a culture that's safe and healthy and wise, then more than one of us, more than two of us, more than three of us needs to have a grasp of that. If we're going to be able to go there when we need to go there, we need multiple settings where people have comfortability and familiarity talking about, yep, like things happened in college, and yep, things happened when I was a kid, and yep, I've been divorced, and yep, sex factored into that in a complicated way, and yep, I have like physical health realities that impact this, and yep, I'm experiencing cancer, and that affects us in this way, and it's kind of fundamentally changed something, and yep, like all of that affects all of us. And so for the healthiest families and the healthiest culture, for the healthiest experience, it really is like a group effort. And so thank you, like, for yourself. I really hope tonight you leave and you say thank you in one sense of like, that was helpful, that was appreciative. And I don't know where I would have gotten that per se tonight, but we also want to say thank you for coming, because you're part of the solution in that we could start a movement where we can talk freely and casually and like respectfully and appropriately about this aspect of life, and that would be good on a lot of levels.
I love it. You in? Yeah. Okay, one more question. So we're here at a church. I would guess most of us Christians who take the Bible seriously.
If you're not, we could address that too.
If you're not, thank you for being here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Heck yeah. Here's my question. What we're going to talk about tonight, how does it connect with scriptural principles?
It doesn't, but it does. All right, think about this. Does scripture like teach to principles of agriculture?
What do you mean?
Yes, but no, Ammon says. Jeff Roth, you've been a farmer. What's a scriptural principle that relates to agriculture? It's not going to tell me how much fertilizer to put on, but it creates a context. God talks about the land and resting it, and a variety of things. It's a common metaphor, like God created the heavens and the earth. Like it's in there, but it's not like the black book of all things farming wisdom. And so tonight's topic is going to be a deeper dive than scripture systematically provides for us. It's going to extend beyond it, but it's not in any way going to negate it. It's not going to go against anything present and explicit in it. This goes with the grain, but we're going to cover ground that I think will ring with the tenor of truth. I think it will resonate and go, oh, that makes sense. And so God graciously doesn't only give wisdom to Christians, right? Imagine a world where all wisdom resided in Christians. There'd be a lot less wisdom in the world. Like, I think the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and that's ultimate wisdom. But there's wisdom in other, you know, domains and sectors, and we would be wise to be teachable where wisdom is to be found. And we can check it. We can do our due diligence and see if that adds up and eat the meat and spit out the bones. And so I hope you open yourself up to thinking about some of these things in new ways, to talking about them in new ways. I'd even ask for, like, I'd advocate for, go with me. Go with me. Let me lead you into some new territory on this. If at the end you're like, then great. You considered some new things and probably feel more convinced and convicted about where you land. But our experience has been that this has been really developmentally helpful and important because without naming and talking about these realities, it's hard to understand them. It's hard to talk about them. It's hard to identify where they do and don't show up. It's hard to teach them. And when you have a hook to hang your hat on, so to speak, with some of these different realities, it helps the cause.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
You ready? What's the first one?
Ladies and gentlemen, I do need to give credit where credit is due. Okay. On the back of your thing, it says, adapted from the 12 dimensions of healthy sexuality developed by Patrick Carnes. Patrick Carnes is an OG of all things healthy and unhealthy sexuality. And kind of a legendary figure who's still alive. All of tonight's content and teaching comes from the second half of this book. It's a weird book title. I kind of usually hold the book title. I hold the book like this. You know, it's just like it just goes better that way. Not like this.
What's the book title?
Sexual Anorexia.
Okay.
Overcoming Sexual Self-Hatred. What? But in the back is 250 pages of what is healthy sexuality to look like. He'd be the first to say, look, we can identify unhealthy sexuality. We know what destructive, manipulative, exploitive, imbalanced, lacking self-control and wisdom. We know what unhealthy sexuality, but very few people have attempted to clarify what does healthy sexuality look like. And it's hard to aim for something you can't define. So in working with those who are compulsively like drawn to sex as a way to cope with their problems, kind of inclined to think sex is my greatest need, and working with those who compulsively avoid sex, who are afraid and uncomfortable with any concept of intimacy or something that like might get too close to the chest, he's trying to frame what is a healthy center consist of, and that's why that's in this book. If you want to buy this book because you want to read 20 to 30 pages on each of this and not just have like 3 minutes on each of these, I highly recommend it. It's fascinating and helpful. So that's the source of this if you want to kind of like find the source. The first dimension of healthy sexuality, drum roll please, nurturing. What? What's the number one thing that babies need when they're born? It's a trick question. What'd you say? Care. Good job, Jenny. You're exactly right. Well, no, I thought the basic human needs were food, water, shelter, clothing. Yes, those are needs. But we know, sadly, science has shown that you could provide all of those for a baby. And that baby, there's a term for it, failure to thrive. That baby will die if it does not get anything more than just its basic needs. So apparently there are more needs. Another angle I want to use to describe needs is God created a world that was good. There was Adam and him and a perfect sinless world. And God says it's not good for the man to be alone. So apparently Adam had needs that God couldn't meet, that a perfect world couldn't meet. What did Adam need that that world didn't provide? Relationship, partnership, friendship, and the nurture, the care given and received that comes from that. So fundamentally, the building block of healthy sexuality is the capacity to receive care from others and to provide care for yourself. These are deceptively simplistic sounding, but they are not so easy. There are many of us who do not know how to nurture ourselves. You might be able to nurture others, but caring for yourself, being thoughtful, considerate, kind, doing things for your physical, mental, emotional needs is not natural for some of us. If you weren't nurtured as a child or raised in an environment that was nurturing, then you likely learned to live without it or to cope in an attempt to kind of get it indirectly. And you could see how sex is related to nurturing, right? There's a through line, but sex is not meant to replace nurturing. Sex is a deeper experience in certain relationships where nurturing exists and provides meaningful giving and receiving of care and compassion. And so young men and women and middle-aged men and women and older men and women, knowing how to identify and be responsive and nurture yourself and being thoughtful and considerate and being willing to extend yourself to nurture and care for another's well-being is a value and a skill and a capacity that's the first building block of healthy sexuality.
So on that note, let's do this. Let's look at the worksheet, at the check-in questions we have here. Let's just kind of practice this. These are not, you're not grading yourself. You are not judging yourself. You are checking in with yourself. There's a pretty big difference. How well do I nurture and take care of myself? And do I let others nurture and care for me? I will read the third column on this one. Here's some supporting thoughts. Plan specific ways to nurture yourself. Invite and allow others to nurture you. Invite God to reveal how he nurtures you. In general, seek ways to practice acceptance and self-care. And I'd love for you to take a look meditatively at some point at Psalm 23, and Matthew 11 is the "Come to me, all who are weary." So a non-judgmental check-in and some ways to kind of pay attention to this dimension of our lives.
All right, I want to add one more element on that that I think is important. Our society as a whole has an anti-nurturing curriculum that men and women are trained in from an early age. And for men, it's suck it up, tough it out. Having needs is being weak. Being weak is to be avoided. Act like you don't have needs. For women, the anti-nurturing curriculum is make your needs secondary to others at your own expense. The fundamental, we're going to get to this in a second, but like, if you don't believe you're worthy of love, and some of us don't, then you are going to have a hard time giving nurture to yourself. You may have a hard time receiving nurture from others. Sometimes when someone does a considerate, thoughtful gift, something in you resists it. You're uncomfortable with the kindness of someone on something that's not essential or critical or necessary. And all of those are little kind of window clues into how we've been taught to almost like view nurture as selfish or to avoid accepting that part of ourselves. And so there's fundamental wisdom here. Okay.
Okay.
Number two.
I'm going to read the next one. Sensuality. The mindfulness of physical senses that creates emotional, intellectual, spiritual, and physical presence. Josh, did you spell that word wrong?
I know.
Sensuality. What happened?
I did it on purpose. I didn't want you to go somewhere else with it. We don't mean like sensuality is like a precursor to sexuality. I mean God created us as sensual beings. Five senses. What are the five senses? Taste. Touch. Smell. Vision. Hearing. These are the primary ways we interact with God's green earth. These are related to sex. That's not a hard concept to understand. You can't magically turn on a nurturing capacity at the flip of a switch. You either have like been preconditioned to like adopt that way of relating to life, to yourself, and to each other. In the same way, you cannot turn on like a sense capacity at the flip of a switch. So many of us move at the speed of light, like the speed of life is the speed of light, where we overlook the, like, smells and sights and sounds and feels and tastes of life. Like, taste and see that the Lord is good. Why is it? What is it about being out in nature that is so immersing in all things senses? The sight of a mountain, like the smell of mountain air, the feeling of tall grass and tree bark and soil, the smell of lavender and all these things. There is something that many people feel closer to God and healthier and better being out in nature. And I just want to affirm that like, yeah, you were made to experience life through your senses. And God created sex not as a conceptual intellectual exercise. That would be way less fun. That would be boring. It's sensory. And so honoring and taking time to slow down and smell the roses is ironically a value for healthy sexuality. This is so funny because when in my recovery journey, when I began to learn about some of these things, my wife knows where I'm going with the story, I learned about this thing called like sensate focus, where I was supposed to like slow down, close my eyes, and like enjoy the goodness of life and the everyday ordinary things.
What did you call it?
Sensate focus.
Okay.
This is like an exercise for my group. So we'd go to this Thai restaurant and it was amazing, right next to this bottle shop, our favorite date place in Tacoma. They had these like tortilla things, but they were thicker, so don't think like normal. And they had this like chicken nut sauce that was like sweet but savory. And the whole thing was kind of one of those like awkward first date meals, but like definitely if you're well into marriage, you can eat that in front of each other. She'd be like talking to me and I'm like, hold on. Eyes closed, awkwardly, just like, But I was like, it became a joy to like take in the sights and sounds and smells and flavors of life that it's like, hold on. I don't want to too quickly move past this. This is so good. My kids hate it. I think it's good for them. So sensuality is an aspect of life and healthy sexuality.
And we didn't write this on the worksheet, but take that with you, the sensate focus.
Sensate focus, slowing down to focus on those.
Maybe even right now, think about like one way you might do that tomorrow, like in your real life, your everyday life, what would you smell, taste, touch, and just like pause and enjoy? There's so many things we race by so quickly. So maybe come up with one of those for tomorrow. Let me know how that goes. Okay, number three, Josh.
Well, and that's a theme in scripture, like beholding, marveling at the magnificence of creation. Like that's a good thing we're called to do. And so that's another way that this is integrated with how God created us. I look at the skies and see the work of your hands. All right, what's the next one?
Self-image. I'm going to read it for us. A positive self-perception that includes embracing your sexual self.
If our overall self-image is poor, it will necessarily affect our sexual life. Many of us seek sex out because our self-image is poor. And we will feel better, or we will feel better about ourselves.
Can you say that again? We need to hear that again.
Oh, shoot, I already forgot it. Oh. I'm just kidding.
Many of us will seek sex out because...
To feel better. Or to feel better about ourselves, because to be sexually desirable to someone is validating. But girl, boy, you're meant to be valid and validated long before some other cute little sweetheart or handsome hunk notices you. Self-image is learning to see ourselves as God sees us. When a son or a daughter has a healthy self-image, there's a confidence that goes with it. There's a confidence that grows with it. You don't have to be perfect to have a healthy sense of self. But if this wasn't developed or cultivated in your growing up environment for one reason or another, then you're going to struggle showing up as yourself in such an intimate and vulnerable way. So identifying and working through our self-image realities are going to be critical because you look at life through the lens of your experience of being yourself in the world. And think about this. When someone has a poor self-image and they kind of like have an Eeyore spirit, it's depressing. Think about it. Have you ever met someone who's like kind of quirky? Like not perfect. You ever met someone who's not perfect? But they just like own who they are. They just seem comfortable in their own skin, and you kind of admire and respect that. Like if I were you, I would be self-conscious about your glasses, your hair, your laugh, your like whatever. But they're not. They're great. And they know they're great. And that's not arrogant. They're just settled in their own skin. And there's something drawing about that. There's something attractive about someone who's content and grounded and not seeking validation from any and every source out there. God loves you. God created you uniquely you. He's not anxious about you, but many of us are anxious about ourselves. And I just want to say that, like, while this is a topic and an issue all its own, it relates to this. It fundamentally relates to relating because you relate from the inside and it's going to get weird. You're going to wig out in one way or another. You're going to overdo it or underdo it in some way if you're trying to compensate for something, if you're trying to hide something. And so accepting who God made you to be, learning to be content and even enjoy being one with yourself, liking yourself, enjoying spending time with yourself, learning to trust yourself. That sounds a little woo-woo. It's not. God believes in you more than you do, possibly. Now, he doesn't think you're infallible, but the truth is, he takes you seriously. And for you to even trust him, you have to trust yourself that you want to trust him. You have to decide that is what important to you. You have to develop a relationship with yourself that's integrated and validated before you go into the world. We're designed to get this from our caregivers, from our parents, but we can get it in community as we learn to be vulnerable and real in front of others. What felt like weakness can become a source of strength when you're known in that weakness and not rejected. And whatever your story, whatever the facts of your life, you can go out into the world confidently, powerfully, in a healthy way that God made us to be. And your experience of it and your expression of being you will change. It'll be different. That's how God wants you to show up in the world fundamentally, especially as it goes to such a core, vulnerable, intimate knowing kind of a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I want to do a quick little practice on this. You know that song that we love to sing, I am who you say I am, that song? Yeah? Okay. Would you with me think of one thing that you know God says about you that is positive, that is good, that is true? Just pick one thing. Can you do that? I am who you say I am. Get specific. One thing. And then, would you just think about that one thing and agree with God? Yes, I am that because you say so. A lot of times, we spend a lot of time disagreeing with who God says we are. So I think we get to do these little micro practices of agreement. Specific. I am who you say I am. Thanks for joining me on that. May it continue. Okay, we're doing good. We're number 4. And we're even going to give you a stretch break after number 6.
Okay.
Number 4, self-definition.
Self-definition.
It's a clear knowledge of yourself, both positive and negative, and the ability to express boundaries as well as needs. I'm curious how this is different from self-image.
Good question. Self-image is like that you exist. Self-image is no longer feeling like you need to become someone else for someone to like you. You need to, like, fundamentally, I don't mean like learn to be a good listener. I mean that, like, who you are as you are would be rejected, not accepted if you were fully known. So you need to, like, fake, contort, adapt. That's part of self-image. That's an unhealthy, God doesn't want you to feel that way. Even though our hearts have an inclination prior to being regenerated towards selfishness, pride, sin, sure. But, like, he made you good. He liked what he made you to be. He wants you to accept that. Self-definition is extending into the particulars of what you are about. Self-definition is identifying what is important to you. What are your values? Who do you want to be and why? Many of us haven't developed self-definition, and so we are influenced by the most powerful influences in our life to go along with what we thought our parents thought we should be, what the church thought we should be, what the cool kids thought we should be. Self-definition, who are you? What are your boundaries? What are your goals? Every one of us is different. And so if I get to know you or you or you, I should get to know a different set of opinions and preferences and joys and fears. When you are not defined, like, I don't mean your identity, but like who you are and how you show up, then you will be reactively defined by trying to find something. And self-definition, here's where it starts to like show up more into sex. Sex is full of pressure. Sex is full of fear. And if you don't know who you are and what you stand for and why, what's important to you, you will be swayed. Someone may not even know that they're swaying you. But if this is not fully developed, then you're vulnerable to being taken advantage of. You're vulnerable to going along with something you don't want to do. You're vulnerable to living according to someone else's values. And I know we should all like live according to God's values and have all the right boundaries. Yeah, but it's like a developmental journey of figuring out how that looks and what that means for you and me. When we show up and begin to date, your like future spouse or partner doesn't want you to become whoever they think you want them to become. They know that you're different from them. They like that. You were drawn and probably attracted to differences in Nate that weren't present in you. You didn't want Nate to be an amorphous person who didn't know who he was or was just trying to be whatever you thought you wanted him to be or to be just like you. No, the differences were attractive. And so Nate, having not just a healthy, grounded sense of self, but also a definition of who he is, what he's about, where he's going, what's important to him, what he will do, what he won't do, that's hot.
Yes, it is.
That's healthy. It like gives you something to relate to and reference. But some of us need to grow in that capacity to go, who are you when pressed? And don't wait for someone else to do that for you. And you can still do that as an adult. Even if you were a people pleaser or conflict avoidant for most of your life, you can still learn to stand up for yourself and go, this is who I am. This is what I want. This is what I need. This is what I will tolerate. This is what I won't tolerate. Even if that's scary or costs me something, it's still worth it to me to live in alignment and with integrity on those values that I really believe in the long run are going to serve me best. That's hot.
Heck yeah. Will you look at these check-in questions with me? I think they can be pretty helpful. They're not the kind of questions that you answer once or just tonight. They're ongoing. Do I have clarity about my values, my strengths and weaknesses? Do I express my boundaries and my needs? Second question, do I have clarity on my sexual desires, values, and boundaries? Really good questions to come back to again and again. Okay, Josh.
One more thing on that. Part of self-definition is a radical acceptance of who you are, where you've been, and what makes you you. There's probably like parts of Nate, sorry to pick on you, Nate, but you're tough. There's probably like parts of Nate's story that when Laura met him aren't exactly where he'd like them to be or weren't always where he'd like them to be. Part of self-definition is like going, yep, there was a season in my life where this happened early on. This is kind of like a developmental challenge for me. Accepting the good and accepting the vulnerability, the weakness, the gap, that's, we can work with that. And avoiding that, ignoring that, hiding that, that's not a healthy way of relating to that. And those things are part of what make us who we are. And we can square with them bravely and courageously and learn to still kind of like show up as our best self. All right, fifth, comfort.
The capacity to be at ease about sexual matters with oneself and with others.
This is an element of healthy sexuality. You cannot experience healthy sexuality if you can't talk about your sexuality. I know we would love to like skip this one and be like, yes, I can.
But isn't that what we're practicing right now?
Yes.
By being here?
Yes. You get a gold star in the comfort category just by being here tonight. Because there's kind of like two things that happen sometimes in a therapeutic setting where we're trying to like help someone work through something. On the first hand, we want to do anxiety reduction, where their nervous system is on high alert and they're kind of tense. We want to help them feel safe. It's going to be okay. As is right here, you're valued, I care, you're safe. But that's not the final state. The final state is actually an increase in anxiety tolerance. Like it's a cold, dark world out there in one sense. But you're tougher than you know. You're more resilient. You're wiser. You have support. You have resources. You can ask for help when you need it. And so comfort is sort of like an anxiety tolerance exercise. Where some of you are like, I have a decent sex life. I feel fine about my sexuality. But I'm like the strong silent type. I just don't need to talk about it. I'm just like, I'm comfortable not talking about it. You're comfortable as evidenced by your ability to talk about it. Why can't you?
Let's ask the question. What makes us so uncomfortable about talking about sex? Anybody? Vulnerability, insecurity.
Insecurity, that's good. Yeah.
Yep. Shame, yes. Rejection.
Guilt. Different ideas.
Yep. Like I might be the weirdo in the conversation, right? Okay, anybody else? Well, sure, but why? Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Yep, it was set up that way. Yep.
Can you think of any area of your life that at one point you were uncomfortable talking about, but now you notice that you can kind of hang, you can handle it, you can manage? Menopause.
Menopause, yes.
Thank you, Kim. Now, some of you chuckle. Some of you can relate and some of you cannot, and you cannot believe she just said that. Here's the cool thing. Kim's fine. Kim's calm, cool, and collected. She's accepted a reality of life that is so like universal eventually, but we're still not used to hearing it. And the encouragement is as we begin to talk about this part of life, the anxiety and stress comes down. You are all in the room because there's a relevance for you on this. If we talked long enough, 2 to 5 minutes with each person in here, we'd find someone in, something in common. You'd go, that makes sense, right? There would be some like relatable identification with each person that you'd go, sure, of course, yeah, in the grand scheme of things. But if everyone leaves those things uncovered, then the whole thing's just like, ugh. Like, how embarrassing, crazy that, like, you have a penis, and you have a vagina, and, like, you have a period, and, like, you have erection, and you don't. And you're kind of stressed out about that. And you can climax easily, and you never have. And you were born with this, and you were born without that. And when you were young, you were touched in this way. And when you were old, you were experienced in that way. Like, these are fundamental realities that I'm not saying you need to come up here and talk about it from the stage. I'm saying with 3 to 5 close friends, could you talk about appropriately aspects of your sexual self? And I hope that the goal of being healthy and wise and experienced and connected, joyful, all that God has for us in sexual intimacy, I hope that the goal of that helps us tolerate the discomfort of working toward a better experience of it. And so...
And Josh, wouldn't you say, like, in our role here at church, we often get to be in these vulnerable conversations that brave people come and say, I need to talk. And sometimes it sounds like I've never told anyone that before. And that is so freaking brave when that happens. And you know what my response is when that happens? Mad respect. It's never, I can't believe you told me that. It's mad respect. And then there's a lightness and a freedom when you're like, ah, oh, it's been eating at me for 27 years. So guys, we got to get better at this. We absolutely have to make space for each other to create freedom on this topic. The end.
Sounds nice, right? But in appropriate ways, at appropriate times, I challenge you. I cannot believe I sit on stage and talk about aspects of like my broken sexual experience. But that was a journey from saying it out loud somewhere for the first time, and then the second, and then the third, and then in a group, and then in like some of my real relationships. And now I feel like more integrated, less anxious. It's been helpful to me to talk about it. It's been helpful to others for me to talk about it. And this doesn't have to become your main thing. You don't have to get weird. You just get to be a holistic human who's integrated, which that means there's a part of your life that's like financial and relational and physical and mental and sleep, diet, and nutrition and sexual, and you have a body. And so be brave and own your reality with trusted people and watch your comfort and ease in these matters grow.
Okay. You ready for number 6?
Yeah. Last but not least, knowledge.
A knowledge base about sex in general and about one's own unique sexual patterns.
I don't want to spend too much time on this one because there's more to this than we're going to cover. But the fact of the matter is that some of us were born and raised in families that didn't cover this at all, and then you go to get married and you're like, what? I have the most hilarious story ever about a couple in like China or Japan that after 10 years of dealing with infertility went into the doctor and they did tests and like everything checks out. Like this is so confusing. Like, nah, yeah, sperm count's good. This is. And then the doctor starts asking some questions. This is going to get awkward, guys. There's just no way around this. Just not going in the right hole. 10 years. That's impossible. You would surely accidentally at some point.
Is that a real story?
Yes. Yes. I could not believe my eyes. Another aspect of this is like, did you know there's 4 phases to the arousal cycle, to the sexual response cycle? 4 phases of the sexual response cycle. First phase, arousal. Second phase, plateau. Third phase, orgasm. Fourth phase, resolution. Doctors and researchers are fascinated by how many physiological changes happen in the human body during those four phases.
Will you say them again?
Arousal.
Wait, what is the title?
The sexual response cycle.
Okay.
Arousal, plateau, orgasm, resolution. The body changes in dozens of ways in these different things. And here's the fascinating thing, that the way that cycle plays out is different from person to person. The way that cycle plays out could be different 10 minutes apart from time to time. I use that as one backdrop to say there's an aspect of healthy sexuality that includes like just a knowledge base about how this works beyond whatever you did or didn't get at 12 or whatever you did or didn't get from porn or wherever else you learned whatever you know. But there's a validated like legitimacy to understanding and like working with God's, that's God's design. That's not like an accidental like bug in the system. That's a feature. And so working with that is an aspect of that. And then learning in particular, for those of you who are sexually active, noticing yourself, understanding what's going on, how this works for you versus someone else, there's a benefit to a monogamous relationship because over time, you can learn one another's bodies and response cycles and what happens with this and that. And it's not the same for everyone. And so there's a joy and a mystery to growing in knowledge about this in general, yourself in particular, your partner if you're married. And that's just the sixth dimension of healthy sexuality.
So you and I were talking earlier this week about like what are our sources though that we go to. And I don't think we're going to be able to answer this super well tonight. But let's just say we're working on it. Of providing resources that are good, that are quality, that aren't going to take us down a really weird path that we maybe shouldn't or don't want to go down. So we're kind of on the hunt there. Josh has some list of resources, but we're working on making that more available. Is that accurate?
One last little anecdote on this. Some of you are familiar with John Mark Comer, a well-known pastor from the Portland area. His parents, when he got married, sat him and his wife down and had a very long, extensive conversation about more than he wanted to know. They talked about everything. Everything. That was not the 13-year-old sex talk. That was the, like, 22, 23-year-old, how can we set you up for success? Here's things to think about. Here's things we didn't know when we began. Here's how this works for her. Here's how this works for him. Here's what not to do. Here's what to do. Here's what we found helpful. Gross. Mom. Then his little brother-in-law and sister, like, he gets engaged, and Brooke's a boy, tells the story about John Mark Comer saying, I just got to warn you, like, you're going to have a conversation with my mom and dad, and I can't believe what they cover. But Brooke was at a fatherhood husband conference thing talking about how helpful and important it was to go, that's a valid source of information. Married couples who have kids, you know more than you did when you started. And I know your kids only think you had sex as many times as you have kids, but comfort. Remember, comfort. You go first. If you could tolerate it, I think they could tolerate it. And in time, I think they will appreciate that as wisdom and valid. And what are the alternatives? We'll find some, but I think that those parents were courageous, brave, wise, and helpful, and that in many ways they helped their kids avoid some obstacles and roadblocks that they inevitably would have bumped into and have to figure out in real time on their own. And yeah.
Okay, we're doing great. Halfway through. We're gonna do like a 3-minute stretch break. If you have to pee, run, okay? And come back. See you in 3 minutes.
All right, we're gonna hit this second sheet a little faster.
Ready or not? Here we go. Number seven, relationship, a capacity to have intimacy and friendship with both those of the same gender and opposite gender.
We were meant to have our relational needs met by a few people, not just one person. Men in particular do not have many close relationships. A study this book mentions, which is like 30 years old, said that only 1 in 20 men in the U.S. had more than one close friend. 1 in 20. So here's the deal. Sexuality is fundamentally related to relating, and we need to have a close relational network to have, like, capacity to single someone in particular out and add a romantic, exclusive, erotic element to that relationship. But again, as all these kind of like build and show, you can't be super healthy, well connected, and relational in one unique aspect of your life without those same traits being evident in other places in your life. And to fundamentally relate to the opposite gender well, we need meaningful relationships with both the same gender and the opposite gender. This is what God designed families to include, to know more about the other. I embarrassingly went to college and was in Old Testament history when I heard about David and Bathsheba and how she figured out she was pregnant, and then he like has her husband killed. And I innocently, naively asked, how did she know she was pregnant if they didn't have pregnancy tests and she wasn't showing yet? I grew up in a family of three boys. It's like, tell me you grew up in a family of three boys. You'd miss a period. What's a period? There's a relational knowing that comes from this that also serves to demysticize the other gender, and also serves to fill in gaps where cultural stereotypes might have you assume that all men are like and all women are like. Many of us grew up with it's called like a sexualized rage, where the disappointment of a mom that betrayed you and a girlfriend that betrayed you makes you feel that all women are fickle and this and this and this. It's actually healthy relationships with other women in your life that like crack the door open to acknowledge that not all women are like that. It's like the importance of a Republican to have a genuine friend that they trust and respect who's a Democrat. You can't talk crap about Democrats if you highly respect someone in your life. We all need an example in our life of someone who's different from us, but who engenders our respect. And so the capacity to have close, intimate, non-sexual relationships, especially last thing on this, is because this happens increasingly in the West, where we want our wife or our husband to be our lover, our co-parent, like our business partner in life, our confidant, our friend, our conversation partner, all the things. And then throughout most of society, most of history, you would have had a broader community with which to process the highs and the lows of life. Like, I had a hard thing happen in my world, and I of course I'm talking about it with my wife, but I called a friend just to process it, because I just needed to express that. Nothing changed, but I felt better. And so relational capacity is fundamentally related to healthy sexuality and building healthy, close relationships. Yes, there's trickiness and stuff, but I think we understand that this is valid.
I'll give an example from my life. One of the healthiest, most giving relationships I've had over the years is a dude named Jeff Brown. Anybody know Jeff Brown? I need Jeff Brown hugs so deeply in my life. I'm not married to him. In fact, his wife is one of my best friends. You okay if I give Jeff Brown hugs? Yes. Happens all the time. He feeds my soul and my body when he wraps his big arms around me. Now, do I go up and get that kind of a hug from every dude in my life? No. We have built this friendship that is platonic. It is brother and sisterly. It is approved by his wife and my husband, and it is a beautiful thing. So I encourage you to be watching for those kinds of relationships with same gender and opposite gender. Okay, keep us going.
Partnership.
Partnership. The ability to maintain an interdependent, equal relationship that is intimate and erotic.
When we are dating, we take risks with each other, and that's what half the excitement and adventure is about. Dating is full of risk. It's full of like forks in the road where there's the possibility of rejection, where you're opening up yourself and risking being vulnerable, because to be loved, you have to be known, and it's worth it. It's exciting. We often settle into a marriage where we stop being honest and open and taking those kinds of risks. And that's because the risks are more laden with like a conflict minefield. And so intimacy and partnership dies when we stop being honest and real. When we start focusing only on the partner's poor traits and all the good things we're doing versus the opposite. And so there's a fundamental skill and capacity to not just like build a romantic bond and relationship, but then you go through the phase that a guy named John Bradshaw called post-romantic stress disorder. Post-romantic stress disorder. And where like different neural pathways are firing, different bonds are being developed, and it takes a different kind of commitment and willingness to be honest, to be vulnerable, to be brave, to say hard to say things about yourself and about your spouse. But if you can and if you will, the relationship will be strengthened. It can handle reality, but it can't handle pretending. And so honesty is honoring in significant relationships, but some of us stopped saying things a while back, and there's a disconnect, and we can't identify it, and we can't work through it if we can't identify it. And so that's the aspect of long-term monogamous healthy sexuality that is important, is our ability to kind of like hang in there and work through real stuff when the fun wears off and it's not as exciting or interesting as it used to be. And one little exercise that you can do on this front is to every week make a list of the ways you like contribute negatively to the relationship, and list each week of what you admire or appreciated about your partner that week. If we would choose to focus on self-awareness and ownership of, I dropped the ball on this, I'll own that, you don't even need to bring it up, and I really appreciated when you, that kind of creates a cultural dynamic shift to kind of help this kind of thing continue as designed.
I thought you wanted to skip that one.
I know, but Let's skip the next two because they involve...
No, you cannot skip this one.
Genital.
Non-genital sex. We're not skipping it.
Non-Gentile sex.
Nope. Genital.
Genital. Okay. It is interesting non-genital how similar
sex.
Those words are. Most of us are Gentiles here.
Okay.
There's maybe a few non-Gentiles.
Non-genital sex.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Are you ready?
Yes.
The ability to express erotic desire emotionally and physically without the use of the genitals.
It's kind of like tying one hand behind your back. Okay, it's getting later in the night.
I missed what you said.
It's like tying one hand behind your back. Watch what I can do. All right. Studies show.
Hey, Rob, we need you.
When people are actually asked what the best part of sex is, in overwhelming numbers, they say it's such activities as kissing, holding, fondling, in other words, non-genital sex. And yes, both men and women say this, that foreplay is the most meaningful, arousing, erotic, satisfying part. Despite such strong attitudes about non-Gentile sex, studies also show that as many as 45% of couples take less than 10 minutes to prepare for intercourse. Non-genital sex is, by all accounts, the most highly regarded and appreciated dimension of sexuality, yet one of the most neglected. Orgasm, I like to say, is a lot like Christmas. It's a fun and intense holiday that goes by very quickly. But it's all the time and preparation that make Christmas the experience that it is.
That's so good.
Isn't that good? I told you, this is good stuff. Who loves, who already loved Christmas?
We're getting that book.
There's wisdom to that. The, like, my wife and I will sometimes go on a little, like, Airbnb or night away, and I'm, like, cheap, and so I know that, like, the prices drop if you kind of book it within 24 hours of going. And there's always options, great options. But my wife is like, half the fun for me is knowing what to look forward to, is like anticipating the fun that is to come. And I'm like, sorry, babe, I gotta save a buck. No, I've learned to like appreciate a different aspect of it and lean into it. And so that's the example we'll use to have meaningful sexual contact, connection, without kind of like going immediately to the orgasm as the only point of sex. The orgasm where it didn't happen, kind of a reality.
Thank you, Josh Mann.
Rare form.
We're doing it. How comfortable are you right now? Anybody? Anybody? Okay. Let's get to genital sex then. It's only going to get better from here. The ability to freely express erotic feelings with the use of the genitals.
So yeah, speaking about genital sex, you guys missed my... you got it. You just didn't think it was funny. Oh, okay, if that's how it's going to be. I would say that the most important part of this section is what Masters and Johnson, some like sex researchers from the 70s and 80s said, we must develop the ability to talk before, during, and after sex. For this part to be as meaningful and rich and connected and mutually satisfying as possible, we cannot read each other's minds. We have to develop the ability to be verbal in our communication and connection. So this, if this is like kind of the main event in some people's minds, it's still not obvious. Like the freedom and the exploration and the joy and the progress of like learning together, going, hey, it's you and me for the rest of our life. Like, let's both have some fun and get into this and figure out for us what this includes, and let's seek to expand that over time. Even our 22-year-old selves that like knew this and liked that and didn't think that we were the kind of person who would ever do this, that's fine. But I hope that in many ways, your capacity to love each other and connect with each other only grows over time after you get married, if you do get married at 22. Hanging in there for uncomfortable conversations as two people with different like sexual ideas of fun, preferences, kind of like come to the surface, that's tricky to navigate. And what many couples end up doing is they end up getting what's called like lowest common denominator sex. And that means like, imagine there's a circle over here that's like everything he wants to do, and there's a circle over here that's like everything she wants to do. And it's like only the part where these two circles overlap is anything that we would do. But I just think there's more room to build range and talk through the discomfort of this or that. And that it can be meaningful and important for a guy who thinks that X or Y is gross to like work through why. Does that mean this is like a no-go zone forever? Or is that something that you could like work on and build your comfort with to provide that, to do that? These are the kinds of conversations that we have to have about this. There's no demanding, there's no rights per se, except like a right to have the conversation and a need to have the conversation and to describe what that would mean and why that's important and what about that makes me uncomfortable. It is so crazy vulnerable to do this part well. It really requires like a nurturing capacity, a sensuality capacity, a self-image, a self-definition, comfort, knowledge, relationship, partnership, non-genital sex, that comes all the way to this point where you are willing to be seen and to be known and to express preferences and opinions and desires and discomforts and to hang in there while you're like, well, these two do not go together. Like the ideas don't go together. And to kind of go, okay, there's no compromise in some things when it comes to sex. And that's important because compromise is to like avoid the conversation having to go any further versus what would it mean to hang in there and continue to kind of live in the tension of what this means for us. And if both people can feel seen and heard and understood and stretched and challenged in their own appropriate, reasonable ways, then that's a marriage that's mutually honoring. And that's going to allow for the most joy and connection possible in this dimension.
Thank you for that. And in all seriousness, we are intentionally going through all 12 of these quickly tonight because we want to see the whole picture, right? All of these coming together, the 12 dimensions. And we will have breakout sessions that are more specific to what makes good sex in partnership. So you can look forward to a more developed talk on this, but tonight's purpose really is to bring all of this together. So we've got two more, and then we might have time for two questions, but let's see. Let's talk spirituality. How does that come into play here?
So at the end of the discipleship pathway is like a stage that few people get to called a life of love and communion. And it's like a deep, profound, don't even need words level of intimate knowing between a person and their life in God. Sexuality connected to that is the potential for each one of us. Our sexuality is so core to who we are that for it to be fully developed, it takes all these other meaningful parts of an integrated life and brings it together like in a powerful, transcendent union. Sex is more than just like, ooh, 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 like, this, that, this position, like. You know what I mean. Sound is worth 1,000 words. What? But like, it's just, it's more than just the physical pleasure and like the meaningfulness of doing this with your partner. Like, sex is about meaning. Meaning is about life change. Life change is about like purpose. A really, really, really healthy, developed person is accepting and integrated and combines the deep vulnerability expressed in a sexually committed relationship and that being integrated to a deep life of joy in God. These at the end of the day are not like, if you follow those two paths, sexuality and spirituality, they don't lead you to two different destinations. So on the one hand, this is beyond a lot of us because there are so many developmental like pathways in between where our gaps lie and what's possible. But I think that if you're married, that there's a potential here that is rich and powerful to for it to be more than just like that felt really good, but almost like that felt really significant. That the vulnerability of two broken people coming together, willing to be seen and known, to give and to receive, to not take themselves too seriously, but to take this seriously, to stretch and grow for each other, to show up in season and out of season, in sickness and in health. That like, this is a really special, rare place that it has the potential to get to. And I appreciate Patrick including like, this is part of the more than intercourse. Sex goes beyond just the like, bump and grind. And kind of points to something deeper and richer. And that's when I think it kind of like is the most like the moon that reflects the sun, where it's the most profound experience of two people coming together, if you're lucky, harder than it sounds, and enjoying a rich life with God.
And I would add, an aspect of this is working at being transparent with God about absolutely everything. Nothing off the table with God. We like to cover ourselves with fig leaves, just like the first man and woman, don't we? But God started with a garden and nakedness with him. And so that's who we get to go to, that God of the garden. Okay, the last one is passion. Lots of definitions for this word, but in this context, what are we meaning, Josh?
We mean nothing is of value to you unless you are willing to publicly declare it. This is where the thing goes full circle. For healthy sexuality to be possible for anyone else, it has to involve someone who's lived that journey talking about it. I believe deeply in the importance of this. It's not the most important thing in the world. In fact, as I've grown in health, sex has reduced in its centrality in my life because I grew up with an overactive, sexualized way of relating to the world as like a 13 and 14 and 15 and 16-year-old with porn and a computer in my room. It is meaningful, but it's important to talk about it. It's wonderful to appreciate it. It's meaningful to accept and integrate whatever your story with it means. But do you have passion in your life for anything that leads you to the point for advocating for it? For dogs at the Humane Society, for like child welfare, for the planet. I mean, passion, the conviction rising up within you enough to speak against the thing that it's not designed to be. And I don't mean in a moralistic, legalistic way. I mean in like a wonderful, beautiful, holistic, transcendent way. And to speak for it, to be an advocate who's willing to own and integrate like your story along these themes. No one's story with this stuff is perfect and complete. And yet we need mothers and fathers who are willing to express hope and joy and wisdom for what this is designed to be and can be, and the grief and sadness of pain of when it's not that and how to recover it again. And so this is the last piece that kind of like helps make that cycle begin again for someone else, because each new person in the world needs someone who's gone that far to introduce them to the delight, wonder, and joy of what's this part of life and what's it there for.
I think the check-in question, the second one on this, if you would look at that with me, I think it really sums this up well. The second question for passion under check-in questions. Am I willing to personally advocate for healthy ways of thinking about and relating to sex and sexuality in my places of influence? I think that's what we're doing here, guys. I think that's what we get to keep doing here as a church family. And I'm super thrilled to be doing that alongside you. Josh, we did it. We did 2 hours of
we did it
of talking about sex.
Way to go.
Yeah. Woohoo!
Not too weird.
We do really want to be timely, but can we take two questions?
Sure, let's do it.
If there are one or two questions in the room, real quick, and then if you got to go, you got to go, but yes, Chris.
I was sensitive to...
Repeat the question.
Why did I want to skip partnership, non-genital sex, and genital sex? Just like a window into my thought process. I was feeling conscientious of leaving space for questions, which we didn't have last time, and feeling like those are the most like familiar ones that someone might come into the room with versus those other ones that we might not have thought about or ever considered. And so... that was kind of my life.
And we will address them more fully in future conversations. Absolutely. So we will not be
good
skipping
question.
Them. I promise. Okay. Thank you for that question. Any other question? Okay, we all want to go home and go to bed. Josh, if somebody needs a resource, if they want to ask a more personal question, what would be the way to do that? I thought I had a slide, but it's not moving. Well, that's okay. That's okay.
It's coming.
There we go. What's this, Josh?
Yeah, email us at healthysexuality@salemalliance.org. We got a bunch of emails after our last one, and it was helpful. What's this like? What's helpful? What does support look like for you? How can we support you in your journey on this? We have support and recovery groups for men and women on this front. We have, last time we sent out an email with resources that we thought were helpful kind of on a variety of themes. Again, the book that 250 pages of content on these 12 things is from this book. It's written at the bottom of your handout there. Would be the most helpful way to kind of grow in that. And next steps would just be to continue to lean in, to like be curious and have conversations about this with people in your world. Like be brave, let someone in, go there. If you need help, ask for it. If you are feeling hopeless, heaven does not look on your situation with hopelessness. And so come forward, come into the light, and we'd love to support you as best we can as we continue to roll these out. Larry. Yes, Larry, there will be an audio and a video. Will this take us to it? No. We will post on our Salem Alliance Healthy Sexuality page the audio and video. I think it will be up like Friday. Thank you, Jill. The audio, it's on this. The first one is in our Spotify kind of like lineup if you go there wherever you get podcasts. This one will be there too, but we will have it on our Healthy Sexuality page, Conversation 2, Conversation 1. And if you found this helpful, please send it to a friend. Nate is hilarious, Laura's husband. He now, like, apparently goes into work and to the golf course and says, hey, you've been married for a while. Yeah, yeah. You ever had issues with sex? And he said, hey, he's 100% hit rate. They're like, yeah. He's like, hey, come. Our church talks about it. So tell a friend. That's passion kind of in action. And there's not enough resources on this. So if you don't think it's helpful, don't send it on. But if you do, pass it on to someone in your world so that we can all continue to grow in this. Okay, yep.
We're good. Thank you, guys.